Good morning, everyone. 10:30 having arrived. I call this remote hearing of the House Preventing Homelessness Division to order. First thing we'll do is take the roll. Robin, do you want to go ahead?
Chair Gomez.
Gomez present.
Gomez present. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler present.
Vice Chair Keeler present. Lead New Brindley.
Present.
Lead New Brindley present. Davids.
Davids present.
Davids present. Heinrich.
Heinrich present.
Heinrich present. Hollins. Oh, Hollins, excuse, sorry. Hornstein.
Hornstein present.
Hornstein present. Howard.
Howard present.
Howard present. Cagle.
Cagle present.
Cagle present. Petersburg.
Petersburg present.
Petersburg present. And Ryer.
Ryer present.
Ryer present. We have a quorum.
Great, thank you. Next, we'll approve the minutes from February 23rd. Representative Keeler, did you have a chance to look at the minutes? And would you like to move their approval?
I did, Madam Chair. I'll move approval.
Representative Keeler moves that we approve the minutes for February 23rd, 2022. Any discussion? Hearing none, if we could unmute for a moment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Motion prevails and the minutes for February 23rd, 2022 are adopted. Okay, so today, members, we're doing two things. We're gonna have a bill later on in the hearing, but first we're going to hear from Kathy Tenbrook and Eric Grumdahl, who we all know as the leaders of the Minnesota Interagency Council on Homelessness. And they're gonna present to us the governor's housing stability budget or the components of the housing stability budget that deal with homelessness. And, you know, I guess I just want to say that, you know, the governor is proposing really a historic investment in this area to really, you know, use this moment when we have a surplus to really make a difference on this incredibly important issue. And so, you know, as we'll see as we go through the presentation, sort of reflects the reality that we all have come to know, which is that, you know, the issue of preventing homelessness and addressing homelessness, responding to it, cuts across different departments, different kind of jurisdictions and different areas. So, you know, we'll see that the investments in this issue are spread across a number of departments. And also, you know, as we're thinking, we should keep in mind the way that you know, shelter saves lives and housing ends homelessness, so that, you know, those of us concerned with preventing homelessness also should be advocating for the investments in affordable housing, in naturally occurring affordable housing preservation, which there's a big investment proposed in the governor's budget. And I know that Representative Howard has been pushing that, you know, if we care about preventing homelessness, then we need to make investments along the entire continuum of housing, from affordable housing to homeownership to NOAA preservation. So with that, I will hand it over to Commissioner Tenbrook, who's Assistant Commissioner for Housing and Executive Director of the Minnesota Interagency Council. Welcome. Or maybe we're going to Eric first. I'm actually not sure.
No, it's me. Thank you, Chair Gomez.
I appreciate it. Okay, welcome, Commissioner. Welcome.
Thank you so much. So thank you very much, Chair Gomez and members of the committee. It's great to see you all again. As the chair said, I'm Kathy Tenbrook, and I serve as the Assistant Commissioner and Executive Director of our Interagency Council on Homelessness. And I am here today to present the Walls-Flanagan budget proposals related to housing stability. So this budget truly represents a transformational way to invest our state resources into the responses to housing stability that recognizes, as I know all of you do as well, the profound ways that the absence of housing stability impacts every other domain of life. From the abilities of workers to find affordable housing options in the places where employers desperately need them, to the options available to a family fleeing domestic violence, to the interventions ready to support someone from recovery from addiction or other chronic health conditions, to the supports needed for our veterans as we are working to effectively end veteran homelessness in this state, to the academic challenges that our students are facing whose families aren't sure where they're gonna sleep tonight, and the desperate lack of shelter options that work for all who need them. And that leaves far too many Minnesotans outside every single night of the year. So today we're gonna provide an overview of the 35 proposals that make up this interagency housing stability package. And we will be sure to leave plenty of time for questions as well. I'm joined in this presentation today by Eric Grumdahl, who, as Chair Gomez mentioned, I think you also all know well, who serves as our Deputy Director for the Council. And we also have agency experts available from the variety of agencies that are a part of this package to help with any really specific questions you have about their proposals as well. So with that, when we were here with you last month, we shared this visual as a way to show you the breadth and the scale of housing challenges that Minnesotans face. We assembled the governor's supplemental budget package with the goal of responding to the needs across this entire continuum, as Chair Gomez mentioned. We know that the challenges posed by housing instability certainly grow more acute as you move from the top of this schematic down to the bottom. But we also see that a critical part of preventing homelessness is about having responses for people as early as we possibly can, so that housing crises, even when they do happen, don't result in homelessness or housing loss whenever possible. We have always said that our work at the Interagency Council is about both preventing and ending homelessness. And it may be difficult to fully appreciate. I know you've had some wonderful testifiers in your committee, Chair Gomez, and many of you have heard some of this, but you know, I'm amazed over and over again as I hear from our partners and people with lived experience of homelessness and people on the edge of homelessness all across the state, what it really is like to be living just on the slimmest of margins. And for renters and homeowners paying far too much for their monthly housing costs, as you all know, one accident, an injury, an unexpected expense, or a health crisis can really be the trigger that shifts them from that chronic daily stress of trying to barely squeak by to a much more acute form of a housing crisis. And we also know that many Minnesotans in these cost burden groups are facing just incredibly difficult choices. And I know you've probably heard the saying that the rent eats first. And it's absolutely true. And this means that cost burden renters are foregoing often many other necessary expenses like getting their healthcare needs met or missing meals or being not able to take care of some of the things associated with their child's education. So these choices become even more limited and more bleak for the Minnesotans who experience the most severe forms of housing instability and homelessness. We know that each year, tens of thousands of Minnesotans in school districts literally all across the state are trying to help their kids learn and stay in school, despite the fact that they don't know where they're going to sleep tonight. Whether these children and their families have found a temporary place to stay on someone's couch, or they've been forced to sleep in their car, or they've been lucky enough to find a shelter bed, we know that none of those conditions are conducive to the best support for kids learning and growing. As for adults, we know many Minnesotans are in that very trapped cycle of looking for a shelter bed, sleeping outside in communities across the state, landing in an emergency room or jail or a detox center. And while it's true that some of these adults are grappling severely with mental health or substance abuse challenges, the fundamental difference between someone in this circumstance and other Minnesotans who are also grappling with mental health challenges and substance abuse issues is simple. They simply do not have the housing that they can afford. So this next slide is also a graph that we have shown you before the last time we were all together. And we wanted to bring this up again. It really shows the range of the kinds of strategies and solutions that can respond to the needs of Minnesotans across this continuum of need, those who are, you know, homeowners, but cost burdened all the way to those who are unsheltered. So this gives examples of the kinds of strategies and solutions that we know work for different levels of need across this continuum. We wanted to put this up again today because we have used this as we have worked to create a budget to respond to the housing needs. And we wanted to make the link for you between the needs we just discussed and the very specific strategies and solutions that are a part of the Walls Flanagan budget proposals. So in a moment, we're going to do that crosswalk with the governor's budget and with these very Minnesotans in mind, so you can more clearly see the range of housing needs that we are hoping to address. And before I turn it over to Eric, I'm just gonna give a very high level numbers crunch here. So as you have in your handouts, you have a 10-page handout document that reviews all 35 proposals that are a part of this package. And once again, as a reminder that it's an interagency package, so these are from six different state agencies. And all told, over the next three state fiscal years, these proposals would invest over $1 billion to dramatically shift how we respond to housing instability across our state. And, you know, we don't have time, of course, today to go in great detail on every single one of those proposals, but we do want to characterize the package as a whole and highlight some of the specifics just to give you the very best sense of what we believe that we can accomplish. And so with that, I am going to turn it over to Eric Grumdahl.
Great. Thank you, Director Tenbrook. And Eric, if you could just introduce yourself to the committee and go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Kathy and members of the committee. My name is Eric Grumdahl, and as Chair Gomez mentioned, I serve as Deputy Director for the Interagency Council on Homelessness. Starting with DHS, our proposals include new state funding for emergency shelters, both for capital improvements and for the operating costs for these settings. These investments recognize the critical need that shelters meet in our communities and the need for these settings not to be held together with duct tape and gumption, but instead to be structured and staffed, recognizing the essential role they play in communities and what we've learned from the pandemic about what's needed for them to operate safely. Most importantly, these funds would help us find solutions for Minnesotans who stay outdoors or in places not meant for habitation. DHS's proposals also include critical resources that help stabilize housing situations or create options for people with the lowest incomes. The Addressing Deep Poverty proposal would make the first increase in the general assistance program since 1986. That program serves adults with disabilities or a circumstance that makes them unable to work and pays right now $203 per month. Today, that safety net program provides only a fraction of the buying power it had when the legislature created it. Shoring up that program means that Minnesotans in deep poverty will have the ability to arrange housing options or to avoid losing housing options that they have today. DHS's proposals also include a number of important targeted investments. These targeted programs and the community providers who deliver services through those programs are focused on the very specific needs of the populations that they serve, whether people facing a behavioral health challenge to securing housing or supporting young people facing homelessness. These programs have been created to meet specific needs that help us find appropriate pathways to housing for people in those populations facing a housing crisis. Finally, DHS's proposals also help to take programs and services that have been very impactful and funded through one-time federal resources and sustain them when those federal funds end. Across the four agencies on this slide, we see new and innovative responses that have emerged through discussions with people closest to these issues, those facing housing crises and people in caring professions that support them. The Department of Public Safety is proposing new innovative responses for survivors of domestic violence. The Department of Health is taking what we've learned from some of the recent HIV outbreaks among people in encampments and standing up responses that work best for that population. The Department of Human Rights is showing up its capacity to respond to claims of rental discrimination. And finally, the Department of Veterans Affairs has identified, using data drawn from the actual list of veterans seeking housing options, what investments are needed to finish the job of ending veteran homelessness. That means closing the gap between the 84 counties that have already been confirmed to reach that goal and the three remaining population centers yet to reach it. That includes also new housing models that are responsive to the specific needs and interests that veterans experiencing homelessness have identified. Lastly, Minnesota Housing's budget proposal includes the largest capital investment request in state history, $310 million in housing infrastructure bonds and GO bonds to boost the statewide supply of affordable and public housing. Minnesota Housing's proposals really demonstrate that span we discussed earlier with the investments that will help close the racial and ethnic disparities in home ownership, funding to preserve more naturally occurring affordable housing, doubling the state's homeless prevention and assistance program to prevent housing crises from leading to homelessness or people become homeless to quickly reconnect them with housing, and investments like the $30 million expansion of Homework Starts with Home, so that program can expand to reach expecting parents and children in early childhood. We also thought it might be helpful to just see how these proposals then do that crosswalk, how they span the range of housing needs tied to those populations that Kathy discussed earlier, and really who might benefit then from these investments. It's important to note that what we're trying to show here is where we expect these investments to have impact. That's not the same as the eligibility for these different programs. That, of course, gets more complicated. But the sort on who benefits from these proposals includes those who may benefit directly, as well as who benefit indirectly. As an example of what we mean by indirect impact, if there's more affordable housing available in Minnesota, that will benefit all kinds of renters by increasing the supply relative to the demand, which will mean that renters seeking housing will have a broader range of options to consider. And that's true even if a specific renter may not have moved into a specific project funded with these dollars. So the first of these five proposals on this slide support cost-burdened homeowners as well as other populations. Those five proposals represent about a fifth, $207.7 million of the total package. The next group of proposals supporting renters or potential renters who are experiencing homelessness right now, those include important investments in creating more affordable housing stock and funding to make developments more viable and competitive. Those proposals continue on the next page with the housing infrastructure bonds and the doubling of the state's Housing Trust Fund rental assistance program. That program works like federal housing choice vouchers, or what are sometimes called Section 8, in making housing affordable by covering the difference between the rent and the amount that a renter can afford to pay. This group of proposals, so all the ones that have the green check mark next to them, represent $635 million of the total package. The next group of proposals is focused on people with the most acute form of housing needs, those who do not have a place of their own. And these proposals include innovative responses that emerged early in the COVID-19 pandemic, like the AmeriCorps Heading Home Corps program, which pairs navigators hired by the AmeriCorps program with nonprofits serving people experiencing homelessness. These navigators are a critical bridge connecting people with resources and housing options and benefits that they're eligible to receive. This group of proposals also includes funding for some of the targeted homeless programs that I mentioned, like the responses to veteran homelessness, the Homeless Youth Act funding, and services for survivors of domestic violence. This group of proposals also includes both the services and the capital for additional emergency shelter capacity. All told, this group of proposals includes the Homework Starts with Home expansion and add up to $894.5 million for doubled up populations and $897.9 million for sheltered and unsheltered Minnesotans. And so finally, there are three items that are really investments in the capacity of our systems to respond effectively to homelessness, including the data system used to manage Minnesota's homeless programs, an analysis of the workforce needs and conditions among people working to support people exiting homelessness, and for additional stakeholder engagement activities. Those three proposals are small relative to the total, but add up to $6 million over the next 3 years. And so these are overlapping totals, as you saw with the crosswalk between populations and proposals. But just to summarize kind of where we landed there, that's $208 million for cost-burdened homeownership, $635 million for cost-burdened renters, $895 million for doubled-up Minnesotans, and just under $800 million for sheltered and unsheltered Minnesotans, and then that $6 million in addition for system capacity. So with that, Madam Chair, I will hand this back off to Kathy.
Great. Thank you, Eric.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks, Eric. And thanks, everybody, for this opportunity. I know that was very quick and a pretty high-level overview, but I hope you can see the range of housing stability needs that, that this budget is attempting to address. And I do want to just stress again that this is truly an interagency effort. None of these proposals were developed, you know, in a vacuum by one agency, but rather were created together to be mutually reinforcing and to ensure that we not only shift our ability to be able to meet, you know, more effectively meet the biggest crises that Minnesotans are facing, but also to ensure that longer term stability and that the prevention resources needed are also in play. And as we have been talking with our stakeholders across the street, which we do on a very regular basis, they are really grateful for this package, for the recognition of their voice and their deep challenges that they've been facing. And as they keep saying to us and reminding us that until, you know, these most basic needs are met, it is really difficult to look at the resources that we have at the state right now as a surplus, but rather as a critical moment of opportunity to finally and truly recognize housing stability as that foundation for success for all Minnesotans. So thank you very much for giving us a moment today, and we're happy to answer any questions.
Thank you so much, Kathy and Eric. We always appreciate you going over this stuff with us. And I personally found that sort of checklist kind of way of presenting it as a really helpful way to for us to kind of get our arms around that, like the investments in the continuum, so that, you know, again, we're not just focusing on response, but on the bigger picture. So really, thank you so much for that visualization. I found that really helpful. So we're going to move to member questions now. I see that Representative Petersburg has his hand up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to make sure I get the numbers right here. So can you give me the overall budget for, I think this is a three-year budget proposal. And then could you break that down to how much is for preventing of homelessness, and what is the dollar amount for those that are experiencing homelessness?
Director Tenbrook or Eric, did you want to take that one?
Chair Gomez and Representative Petersburg, the total amount for the entire package over those 3 years is $1,027,000,000. And that 10-page handout at the very end of it includes the table that you saw, but also has the grand total line, so you can look at that also by state fiscal year. The split between prevention and other activities is complicated, because many of the activities actually, as you saw in that graph, kind of span multiple potential purposes. And some of that depends on what particular needs present themselves to a provider that's delivering that program. So the same provider can support somebody to prevent them from experiencing homelessness, or who's experiencing homelessness get back into housing. So that kind of varies at a person by person level. And then other programs, it really depends also on kind of what providers propose to do with funds through competitive RFP processes. So there isn't a bright line that's consistent between prevention activities and other activities across this slate of portfolio programs. I hope that helps.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I think you must have at least some sort of general ballpark figure if it's 20%, 30%, 50% or so. And I'll ask my second question along with that, and that is, help me understand what the process, or what are the programs that you have for HIV prevention? I'm not sure exactly what that entails. So if you got more information on that, I appreciate that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Grumdahl, did you want to go ahead? I don't know if we have somebody from the Department of Health here to address the specific HIV question, but we can do that afterwards.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and Representative Petersburg. I'm happy to take a stab at this and then invite MDH colleagues, if they have more to add, to jump in. I think with the HIV outbreak prevention line item, that was really specifically kind of developed in response to some of the outbreaks that that you may have seen headlines even about over the past year, where really being able to have tailored responses that work for individuals that are in an encampment, that's a different kind of HIV prevention activity than some of the other programming that exists in the field. And so this is really intending to provide resources that are able to help focus specifically on the needs of folks in encampments and reduce the likelihood of another big HIV outbreak like that. I hope that helps, Representative, but welcome MDH colleagues if they have more to add to that to jump in.
Thank you, Mr. Grumdahl. I don't see anybody who has their hand up or coming off camera or on camera, but Representative Petersburg, I just wanted you to know that I'm working on with the department on pulling that out as kind of a freestanding bill so that we'll have the chance to have it in front of our committee and learn more, because I think I had similar kind of questions about just wanting to know more on the details of that. Was there anything further, Petersburg? Or did you
know that's fine. I mean, the other question is sometime it would be nice to know kind of a ballpark figure and how much money we're spending on prevention versus providing homes as well. I just think that's important for us to be able to get that kind of verification to know where we're investing our dollars in. And we can do that at another time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Ms. Bosch, did you want to contribute something?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks, Chair Gomez. And for the question, Representative, about the HIV prevention portion of this proposal. Just for the record, my name is Anna Bosch. I'm the harm reduction program specialist at the Minnesota Department of Health. Can share a little bit more about what those HIV prevention services are for people experiencing homelessness. But the recommended proposal would be expanding harm reduction services, which are programs that reduce the harms associated with drug use for people experiencing homelessness. So those would include improve linking folks to HIV prevention services like testing and treatment and syringe services programs, as well as linking folks to treatment for substance use disorder and medical care for infectious disease, including HIV and viral hepatitis.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Bosch. We appreciate that that detail. So I don't see that Rep. Petersburg has any follow-up. Representative Howard?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the presentation. And first, just wanted to thank the governor and our agencies for really having a thoughtful approach and making significant investments across the housing continuum. I think that's the right way for us to look at it, and really appreciate the perspective that, there's something missing. There's a gap that's missing when we have such a significant surplus, and yet Minnesotans are sleeping in the street. And so we have an opportunity to address that. My question is there, speaking of the continuum, is there a concern that we are going to see an increase in the level of unsheltered, our unsheltered populations as we come out of this pandemic with the end of emergency rental assistance and rent help MN? I'm just this morning actually got some data from Homeline that really shows a pretty alarming spike in the amount of calls that they're receiving and the amount of distress that renters are facing who are still struggling amidst the pandemic. And I'm just curious if that is a concern on your end in terms of seeing our numbers increase in an arena where really throughout the pandemic we've done a remarkable job.
Ms. Tenbrook?
Thanks, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Howard, for that question. I think the answer I would give is not only related to rent help, but we have seen so many really important investments made during the pandemic that have helped us respond and protect people and assure the best security we could for Minnesotans. Lots of those dollars are coming to an end. So the rent help is certainly a piece of that. And I know people are working really hard to do all we can to serve as many Minnesotans with, to get through that moment. I would also add, we are seeing some cliffs that will affect shelters who no longer will have dollars to remain open as well. So our attempt with this budget, and I know that the needs are urgent, but our attempt with this budget is also to help sustain some of that really critical work that was done with federal dollars and continue on some of those pieces that we don't see so many cliffs and so many impacts on Minnesotans. So Eric, I don't know if you have anything you'd like to add in more detail.
Mr. Brimbaugh?
I think that Chair Gomez and Representative Howard, I think Kathy's response was right on the nose in terms of what I would add.
Great, thank you, Representative Howard.
Thank you, that's a helpful answer and a helpful way for us to be thinking about this moment, both the urgent moment and then the long term, how do we come out of it? And I guess one follow up with the news of a growing surplus that's now 9 billion and I think over 10 billion if we count one time federal resources. Just curious about the process of looking at this issue. Are there things that you're considering making requests to make even more significant investments, given that there's new resources? Is there kind of like a list of things that you'd like to see us take another step on? And I know that there's probably a process there, but curious of your thoughts about with the new surplus number and what you're looking at, and maybe advice to us what we should be looking at.
Assistant Commissioner Tenbrook.
Thanks, Chair Gomez, and thank you, Representative Howard. Yes, we're absolutely thinking about that. And I would say, to your point of the process, we are at the beginning of, you know, we're obviously just getting that news ourselves and really looking closely in particular at some of those cliffs and some of those challenges that we face and where some of our biggest, most significant gaps are to see if there might be something we need to additionally shore up. But we will absolutely, you know, share more on that as soon as we can.
Great.
Thank you.
Anything further, Representative Howard? Very good. Okay. Next, Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for this really fantastic proposal and all of your great work, Ms. Tenbrook. I just have a question. You know, when you talked about the $250 million in housing infrastructure bonds, would, you know, the types of facilities, you know, that provide, you know, wraparound services, transitional housing, would that be included? I know you didn't do a real breakdown of that $250 million, but would facilities like that, as you know, I've spoken so often in this committee that I'm a big fan of that Steve O'Neill Apartments model that exists in Duluth, but in other places as well. So, you know, my understanding is that was partially financed with housing infrastructure bonds. So do you envision, you know, facilities like that being funded in this proposal?
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. One of my favorite projects as well, just so you know. One of my favorite people, by the way, is Steve O'Neill. Dan Kitzberger from Minnesota Housing is with us today. And if he wants to pop on, I think he could give the very best answer to that.
Great. Mr. Kitzberger?
Yeah.
Great. Hi.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. Representative Hornstein, I'm Dan Kitzberger. I'm the legislative director at Minnesota Housing. The short answer is yes, absolutely. These funds would be awarded through an RFP process as part of our consolidated RFP. So we would envision projects like that. So for permanent supportive housing, so that's for not time limited housing with wraparound services, as you mentioned. And I would just note that housing infrastructure bonds continue to be our largest state-based source of capital for preservation and development of new supportive housing. And we've really put an emphasis on developing new supportive housing throughout the last several RFP cycles throughout the state.
Thank you, that's wonderful to hear. I appreciate that that work.
Great. Anything further, Chair Hornstein?
No, thanks. Appreciate the work you're doing.
All right, cool. Are there any further member questions? I'm not seeing anyone, so maybe we'll just move on to our next item on the agenda. And thank you so much to Ms. Tenbrook and Mr. Grundahl and all the rest of the staff who are joining us, which really just, you know, demonstrates I think the commitment to addressing this issue across the entire state enterprise. And as we know, that's the kind of effort that it's going to take for us to really make moves on this. So thank you so much. And our gratitude to the governor for putting forward such a great budget for housing stability and homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Gomez and committee, very much.
Thank you. All right. So next, we have House File 2762. This bill was referred to the division from the Human Services Committee. I'm going to move. Oh, I'm sorry. Was there? I'm okay. I think we might have a public testifier on the last item. Is Ms. Stones, Alana Steins, I see. I'm so sorry. Excuse me. Welcome to the committee. Please just share your name with us and proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Alana Steins, and I'm the Director of Program Development at AMPACT. AMPACT is the nonprofit that delivers several of our state's largest AmeriCorps programs, including Minnesota Reading Corps and Minnesota Math Corps. Our programs are part of Serve Minnesota, the State Commission on National and Community Service. Today, I'm here to testify in support of the provision in the governor's supplemental budget to expand Heading Home Corps, an AmeriCorps program that is adding capacity to agencies and organizations addressing housing instability and homelessness in our state. Heading Home Corps is tapping $2.2 million in federal AmeriCorps program funding and $600,000 in post-service education awards to help our state do two critical things. One, add capacity to organizations supporting families and individuals experiencing housing instability. And two, Heading Home Corps will also serve as a workforce hub for a field facing shortages and provide opportunities for individuals with lived experience. Nonprofit and government agencies need additional capacity to address increasing rates of homelessness, and Heading Home Corps assists by providing housing resource navigators to help expand capacity and help more people secure stable housing. Housing resource navigators, many of whom have lived experience, serve full-time helping people access resources, develop action plans, and build necessary skills in order to gain and maintain stable housing, which is a prerequisite for making other improvements in life, such as searching for a job or addressing physical or mental health. Madam Chair, committee members, please consider supporting the governor's proposal to fund Heading Home Corps. And thank you so much for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much, Ms. Steins. I'm so sorry that I skipped over you. I see the Representative Cagle has a question or comment. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And as an alumni of the AmeriCorps program, and I also served on the board of Serve Minnesota, I just want to put my support in for that provision. I know that AmeriCorps does great programs, really expands capacity, gives people experience working in the fields, and also the education credits that you get as well are a really big deal. So it's a great program that really gets people involved in all levels of nonprofits and everything from Conservation Corps to Reading Corps to Math Corps. It makes a huge difference in our communities. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Cagle. I'm just learning about this effort myself. Actually, I think we have like a meeting later today with some of the folks who are working on this. And, you know, we have heard about from our providers just about how overwhelming and how burnt out their staff are. And, you know, we know that people who are doing this frontline work with those experiencing homelessness, especially unsheltered homelessness, that it's just hard work, and you don't get paid a ton, and it's emotionally exhausting, and it's just really intense. And so, you know, we're really thankful for this effort to bring some added capacity to some of these organizations, these service providers that are really like stretched super thin in these times when there's workforce shortages across the board. So appreciate that.
And Madam Chair, if I may.
Yeah, please go ahead.
Also some of the most rewarding work you can do as well.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is. To be with people in their time of need is, while it's really hard, it's also a great honor, I know. So thank you for saying that, Rep. Cagle. Okay, so now we're gonna move on to the thing that I like tried to move us on to before we were done with this item. So we have House File 2762 in front of us. It was referred from the Human Services Committee. And I'm going to move that House File 2762 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. House File 2762 being before us, I want to welcome Representative Stevenson to the committee. Rep. Stevenson, please go ahead and present your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee for hearing this bill today. I want to apologize that my camera is off, and if you hear some road noise, I had an unavoidable meeting that I had to make it to, and I'm in transit back to the Capitol right now. But this bill, important, I'm grateful to have the opportunity to talk about it. The bill allocates $8 million to a not-for-profit called Hope for Youth, which is the only not-for-profit in Anoka County, one of the state's largest counties, serving homeless young people. And I'm glad that we can have a conversation today about suburban youth homelessness. I know that probably this committee knows very well that both suburban homelessness and youth homelessness is harder to see than what we typically think of when we think of people struggling with housing security. You know, homelessness looks different in the suburbs and it looks different among young people. And I will tell you that I first learned this, if you'll indulge me, when I first heard about this not-for-profit years ago. I was on the Planning Commission for Coon Rapids, and Hope for Youth came forward with a proposal to build a 12-bed residential facility for homeless young people in Anoka County, with the ability to someday in the future perhaps expand to 36 beds. And I was on the Planning Commission and I saw this proposal and I said, this is great. I mean, I love that they're gonna do this work, but boy, I don't know. I've lived in Coon Rapids my whole life. Is there really a need for 12 beds, let alone 36? I mean, I was just so clueless about the level of need at that time. And my eyes were really open when I talked to the people at the not-for-profit in the hearing. And they do phenomenal work with very limited resources for a population that desperately needs the help. And what they are asking for now is the ability to expand and build a new drop-in center in Anoka County. As I mentioned, it would be the only facility of its kind in Anoka County. And just a critical a piece of the puzzle for the northern suburbs of Minneapolis in terms of addressing the problems that we have. Madam Chair, I have, I believe, three testifiers. There are two people from the organization that can tell you much more eloquently than I can about the good work that they're doing. And then we also have a young person who has worked with this organization in the past. We were supposed to have two, but I think one had trouble connecting. So we have just one with us today, but with your indulgence, I'd love to hear from the testifiers.
Great, thank you, Representative Stevenson. We're gonna go to our testifiers now. Lachelle Williams, welcome to the committee. If you're on the call, if you could introduce yourself and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We are absolutely honored to be here today. My name is Lachelle Williams, and I'm the executive director with Hope for Youth. And if I may share my screen, I'd love to do that.
Yes, please.
All right. You know, I'm speaking to a group of individuals that know homelessness better than probably any group of leaders in our great state, but homelessness is real. This year, over 13,000 individuals, Minnesota youth, will experience homelessness. Those children and unaccompanied youth 24 years and younger make up half everyone of our homeless population. Young people, as Representative Stevenson just shared, the youth are like the least visible. And so we aren't going to see them in the same way that we might see adults. In many cases for our 16 to 24 year old youth, life happened to them. And what I want to say and continue to shout from the rooftops is we are here as an organization. And forgive my my PowerPoint demonstration, I apologize. our mission, everyone, is to end those pathways to end youth homelessness. We believe and know that we can because we have 9 years of experience doing so. Our vision is to ensure that every youth that walks through our doors or works with our team feels safe, they feel valued and supported. We focus first on those basic needs, making sure that those are met. And then we work with them coming side by side through case management to give them tools to thrive. We're very rooted in our strategic direction, making sure that we're honoring the donations and the support we have from the community. And as Representative Stevenson said, we have two facilities by which we are working with the community to empower youth. Today, we're talking about our drop-in center. And what has been amazing for me as our executive director is to see that COVID had no impact on the reality that youth homelessness would decline. It actually grew. Last year, we saw a 45% increase, everyone, in the number of youth walking through our doors. 314 unique individuals came to us for support and help. They visited nearly 2,500 times. And while we're rooted in Anoka County and being the only facility that supports youth in this capacity, our young people come from Hennepin County, Ramsey County, and Northern Metro counties. You can see the demographics of our youth. We work with and support anyone that comes through our doors and are honored to do so. As I shared, they come to us hungry. They might come to us looking for support and help in maybe filling out a job application or a rental agreement form. They might need a shower, just a place to rest. And we're fortunate enough to have been able to provide that through the 9 years that we've been serving our youth and are happy to do so. What our goal is to build in the next level of support for these young people, and that's by the work we do in case management. 64% of our young people received case management with our team, working with community partners on referrals, whether they're dealing with chemical dependency or trauma from their childhood, whatever it might be, we want to be here for them. Our approach is really rooted in a fourfold effort as we walk along our youth. As you know, homelessness is often preceded by adverse childhood experiences. Again, they didn't choose this. This is often things that happen to them. And so we meet our youth where they are. And we'll come alongside them, making sure that our work with them is focused on harm reduction, a client-centered or youth-centered engagement, always strength-based mindset, and then trauma-informed care. Through this model, our Hope for Youth team has addressed those interconnected issues that often don't surface until a youth feels safe and in a trusted relationship. So as Representative Stevenson shared, we are here today with a very important request to look at a new facility, a new center for our drop-in efforts. While we are making great, great progress and continue to move the needle for those youth that are coming through our doors, we are literally busting at the seams. We don't have the space in our current 6,000 square foot facility to work with the youth, quite frankly, in the way that they need. And the opportunity for us to partner with those great partners in the community that are at the ready to help our youth just doesn't exist. We've got one private room where young people could de-escalate, and we need more than that if we have 25 and 30 people in our facility at a given day. What we see as a solution is a new facility, everyone, that would provide opportunities for us to continue those basic needs support, really honing in and working with our youth to create stable housing opportunities and then maintaining those housing realities. Whether it's employment, education, or vocational training, we are there and want to continue to improve that. And then so much of what our young people have dealt with needs deeper support. And so we want to make sure we're bringing the people that are at the table that can help them through those healthy connections and really building their social, emotional, and well-being. Our goal is absolutely to build and empower our youth to be contributing community members and self-sustaining community members. And we know that we can continue to do that. We just need a facility that allows us to do that. You know, while we're talking about bricks and mortar in this conversation, it is so, so much more than that. It is truly the space that we'll be able to use to enhance our program offerings and then make sure that the services and the partnerships that are needed are established and delivered. So with that, I thank you so much, Madam Chairman and committee members, and I will stop sharing now.
Thank you very much, Ms. Williams. We appreciate your testimony. Next, we have Mark McNamer. Mr. McNamer, if you want to introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Oh, there we go. To get my unmute off. Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for taking the time to listen today. My name is Mark McNamer. I'm the Director of Programs at Hope for Youth. And today I just wanted to give a little more deeper dive into kind of who Hope for Youth serves, the programs we provide, and outcomes that we strive to meet. Am I sharing? I'm trying to see if...
Yeah, we can see your slides. You're good.
Okay, good. So yes, as kind of Lachelle was talking, we serve young people that are homeless, meaning generally they are couch hopping, they're staying with friends, they're living on the streets, or they're in living in cars, or wherever they can find a place to sleep. Many of the young people we see have family, have come from families that are homeless as well, which contributes to kind of the problem. Most have experienced some sort of trauma, whether it be physical, emotional, or sexual trauma. So that's either from, you know, potential family members in the past or just living in the situations that I just mentioned can put them in really high risk situations. Many of the young people we see are fleeing domestic violence and sex trafficking, which is a huge problem with the young people we see. Also, many of the young people we see have ongoing issues with mental health and or chemical use. So Hope for Youth provides a lot of basic needs. We provide a food shelf, a clothing closet. We have hot meals, showers, hygiene supplies. We even supply baby products for those young people that have children. And then also we have lockers for young people to store personal items and keep them locked up. Or it's just a place for young people to go to stay warm in the winter or even cool down in the summer. We provide intensive case management to those young people. As Lachelle mentioned, we walk alongside youth and let them come to us. But our goal is to provide that intensive case management where we're providing one-on-one support to meet basic needs, but also work on long-range goals for the young people we're serving. We also provide a ton of on-site services from community partners. We work with the Workforce Center in Anoka County. We have a member that comes out once a week to provide guidance and direction around vocational and educational opportunities. We bring mental health folks into the building when possible. We have a ton of volunteer mentors that provide mentoring services. We try and do some recreational activities and then also educational connections. So whether it's a young person looking to complete their high school diploma, their GED, or even post-secondary education options. We also make a lot of referrals to other community organizations like the YMCA and other youth serving organizations within the metro area. So really focusing on that mental health, trying to get young people into emergency shelter, trying to get young people into longer term housing options. We use car repair funds to try and get, you know, vehicles repaired so young people can get to work. And then also connecting them to county services as well. We also provide parenting supports. Like I mentioned, as Lachelle indicated, about 20% of the young people we see have children of their own. Those children are more than welcome in our facility. Now, when there's 7, 8, 9, 10 young kids running around, the facility does get a little packed, a little crazy. But again, we provide support groups through FamilyWise, another nonprofit. And then we also have an ECFE, early childhood family education person that comes in and provides classes for those young folks. And then a ton of basic needs support as well. So that, you know, the ultimate driving outcomes that we're trying to achieve as a program is long-term sustainable housing. I emphasize that sustainable as it is, that's an ongoing process. Just sometimes it takes more than just placing a person into a housing, but they need kind of supports after that. Education and employment are key components of what we try and, whether they're working, how do we move you forward in a career exploration, vocational training, internships, and other post-secondary options. So we're always kind of looking at advancement in that area. Social emotional well-being is a key component of what we try and do with young people. You know, good, healthy, positive young people, you know, have worked through some mental health issues, you know, maybe through some chemical use issues, but are just able to kind of connect and be socially well. And then connectedness, really a huge piece of what we try and do is just get young people to trust and try and connect to positive people in their lives, whether it's peers, adults in the community, or just, you know, adults in general. So we really take a kind of four, you know, approach of all of these things need to kind of be worked on in tandem as we're kind of placing young people into housing. We see the most success when people are moving forward in all of these areas. So in closing, Hope for Youth is here to guide young people to be productive, positive, self-sustaining members of the community. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. McNamer. We appreciate your testimony. Next on my list, I have Momo and Davion both listed, but I don't know if maybe Rep. Stevenson said only one of those individuals is here.
Davion is not able to be here, but we do have Momo.
Excellent. Welcome to the committee, Momo. Please just state your name and go ahead with your testimony. Hi.
Hi, my name is Momo. I was originally from, I grew up from Liberia, West Coast of Africa, and I got here 2013 in America, and that was like the first time me seeing my parents because I never grew up with my biological mom and dad until at the age of 14. So things went okay for a little bit until after like a couple of years, they threw me under the bus, messed up my credit card, pulled me out of my house, kicked me out of my house, and then I started going on the bus. I wasn't able to pay for my car loan, car insurance, and things just fell off track for me. And literally, I lost hope, and I became homeless, and I didn't have nothing to do, and I was very, very lost in a place where I actually started thinking about trying to take my life away, which was not a great option until I met my girlfriend, and she told me about Hope for Youth, and the moment I stepped in Hope for Youth, the lady we started putting in work for me and trying to get me to the place I am right now. The lady we helped me with an apartment and is still helping me pay for my apartment up to now. And they even helped me with food, groceries that I come and get every day. And they even helped me with our transportation, which is very, very important to me. And I don't have a car right now, so I usually ride a bus. And right now, I literally just got approved with another program that's going to help me pay for my college. So I'm literally having 2 years left in college, and I'm so grateful for Hope for Youth helping me find somebody to be able to pay off my college, which is very, very one of my most important thing I wanted to do was to finish college because it helped me stay focused. And Hope For You initially helped me, like I said, my apartment, like the rents, and really do come in. And one of the reasons why I love Hope For You was when I stepped into the door, they took my kids very seriously. They show me the attention I need. They listen. And that's one thing I've never experienced in my entire life. None of my family ever listening to what I have to say. They listen and they help me. And why am I now? Right now, after all the help for you have provided for me, now I have a guaranteed job. I'm able to pay my bills now on time, and Hope For You still helping me in case I need help paying my bills. But right now I'm in a good position that I'm able to pay my bills and go to work. And I'm just grateful for them giving me that opportunity to see life in a whole different way, because I lost hope, not gonna lie. I lost hope, and Hope For You was the place that literally let me gain my hope back and see the world in a different way. So I'm literally just grateful for whatsoever opportunity they gave to me. And right now, I see them a little bit struggling with a little bit of food in the pantry, and a lot of people be showing up to the location we usually come to, and that's literally, so I usually work from in the morning to 4, so when I come back here to get food, it's like kind of hard for me to get food, because a lot of people already show up in the morning to get food, which I understand because they do need help. So yes, it's just helping them with the facility will really be helpful for them. And really just, like I said, I'm really grateful for Hope For You stepping in my life to change my life, because without Hope For You, I wouldn't even know where I would be, to be honest, because my life was really, really different 2 years, 3 years ago. Like I said, I literally quit on life. There was no point of me living on this earth when I went through the situation, and Hope For You really changed that for me. And I'm really, really thankful for the people who supporting Hope For You. I'm really, really grateful for all the stuff you guys are giving them to help us, because it really, really helping us to get back on our feet. And we are really thankful for the opportunity you guys are giving us. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here, Momo, and for your testimony, and congratulations on getting college funded and all the wonderful things that you're doing. Thank you so much. We really appreciate the perspective. Thank you. And I guess I just wanted to, we have another testimony to our testifier, but it just made me think about Dr. Foldis's research that he presented to us last week, and Vice Chair Keeler's bills on the Homeless Youth Act. And, you know, the need really to invest in these young people and to help these organizations that are really like on the front lines, meeting the needs of young people in our community who are struggling, and, you know, that it's worth it. It's worth making the investment in our youth. And so thank you so much, Momo. I have Casey Snaza on our list as a testifier. Also, I don't know if
that was supposed
to happen or not. Hi, yeah.
Madam Chair, Casey is our team member who was providing the connection for Momo. So we're good there. And then our second testifier, the young man, Davion, was detained, and he was not able to leave his job to be able to come today. So he thought he could, but we apologize.
No worries. Hopefully we can hear from him in the morning, in the morning. Maybe we can hear from him at another time. So we have a couple of member questions. I just wanted to mention that I went and visited Hope For Youth. They were kind enough to host me. I'm sure that if anybody else wants to go and check out their program, that Representative Stevenson can make that connection. But just wanted to highlight, you know, that they don't have a kitchen facility, so they would love to like provide people with hot meals, and they're really not able to do that in their current spot. They, as Ms. Williams mentioned, you know, they'll have, you know, therapists or social workers that come, but there aren't a lot of like private spaces to do case management work or like an office where you can sit with somebody and talk through something privately. They do a lot in their space, but there really is a need to expand that. And so we're happy to be hearing this bill and passing it along. So we're gonna go to member questions or comments. Representative Heinrich.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. I just wanted to thank, first off, the testifier Momo. What an encouraging story. And just wanted to thank you for sharing your story with us. It's encouraging to hear success stories, and it sounds like you're motivated to really make some positive changes in your life and continue to move forward. So I was really happy to hear that. And thank you to Ms. Williams and Mr. McNamer at Hope for Youth. You know, that's in an area, actually in the district I represent, in Anoka, right next to, there's a few other places that are great organizations right around the area. I just wanted to kind of call them out too. We got ACBC Food Shelf in Anoka, Anoka Community Mission. They do daycare and preschool and also a food shelf. That's just across the street, actually, from where Hope for Youth is located. Of course, Hope for Youth and then Haven for Heroes is just up the road of serving veterans. And Stepping Stones Emergency Housing, more of an adult-focused mission that they have going on there. So what I really like, though, about Hope for Youth, and we heard about, I think, Youth Link last week. And, you know, these are some organizations I really feel encouraged about getting behind, because they really deal with more of the root causes, I think, of homelessness. And that's really what the focus of this committee is about, is preventing homelessness. And so I think, you know, some of those root issues are just as simple as literacy and some foundational relationships that help support and encourage an individual for them to, you know, learn how to take responsibility for themselves and recognize their responsibility to others. So Representative Chair Gomez, I wanted to thank you also for recognizing that these organizations are certainly on the front lines helping young people. And that's really what I'm excited about in this committee, is trying to deal with those root issues and where's the front lines and where can we help them all. So thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this bill forward. And thank you, Chair Gomez, for the time.
Thank you so much, Representative Heinrich. And the other thing that I just wanted to mention was, I know that the community where you and Rep Stevenson live has also really stepped up in a big way for this organization and others that are close by. And so that's the other piece, right, is that, you know, it's not just support from public entities, but from neighbors and, you know, faith groups and other folks who are in the community who really just care deeply about this organization and this population. So thank you, Representative Heinrich. Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It looks like we got the Anoka County delegation here. But I was just kind of curious, Ms. Williams, what kind of community outreach you've been doing, and mainly if you guys, if it was you and some of your volunteers and participants that were right across the street from my house doing school supply drives a year or so back.
Ms. Williams.
Yes, thank you, Chair Gomez, and to Cagle. Answer your question, Cagle, yes. We are unbelievably supported by the community. I think if there's anything that I have been most impressed with is the community love and support and belief in the mission and the desire to actually do something and make a difference. And so, yes, the community drives are unbelievable. And all of the items, the donations go directly back to the youth. So it's been a wonderful experience and opportunity. And we have, you know, while we have some corporate partners, we have some foundation partners, the lion's share of our operating dollars do come from individuals. So it is people that are living as your neighbors that want to make a difference and want to see change. Did I answer your questions?
There was a year or so ago where there was a big organization. I think, I don't know if Mark, you were there, or they were working with Blaine Police and doing
out in the cold?
No, it was in the summer. It was in Northtown parking lot.
I'll defer to Mark on that one if I may.
No, we have a, I can't remember exactly what that one would have been, but we have a ton of like the local high schools will put drives together. So it's a lot of the senior projects and different things like that. So again, as Representative Gomez mentioned, I mean, we have huge community support from high school level all the way up to, you know, seniors and churches and different things like that. So we do, you know, dozens and dozens of those events a year in the community. So.
And one last question, Madam Chair.
Yeah, please go ahead.
You guys work with the Anoka County homelessness group then. I know they've been doing a lot of outreach at the transit stations and some of the parks and stuff around. You know, I'm in southern Anoka County, so a little more densely populated. And so we've been seeing a lot of that just, you know, in our neighborhoods as well.
So if I can jump into that, yeah. One. Yeah. So we're actually a member of the StreetWorks Collaborative. So they are a metro-wide collaborative organization that does street-based outreach. And we actually have a trained outreach worker that is providing outreach in Anoka. So.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Namer. Rep. Cagle, you good? Okay. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Rep. Stevenson. My questions are for you, I believe. I'm just wondering, this has a blank appropriation in it, and I'm wondering if we're looking at likely the $8 million that's referenced in the PowerPoint presentation, or if you have figure out what that dollar amount will be yet. And I'm also wondering if there are any matching funds for this.
Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative New Brindley. Yes, it is the $8 million that we are asking for in general fund dollars. The not-for-profit organization, as Ms. Williams and others have noted, really is, they're not a big buck operation, and they really are funded by individuals in Anoka County to get their work done. So there's not contemplated a match towards that $8 million. However, they do recognize that they will need funds to maintain and operate the new facility, an endowment of sorts, and they would provide those funds, which Ms. Williams will correct me, but I believe that's another million or two that they would bring to the table to endow and operate the facility. But the $8 million is what we'll be asking for in general fund dollars.
Thank you. Yeah, could I just follow up? So the blank appropriation that's in the bill, because there's a blank appropriation and then there's the $8 million. So what is the blank appropriation for?
Madam Chair, I think.
Yeah, sorry, Representative Stevenson.
The blank appropriation should be $8 million. I don't know that $8 million is referenced in the bill yet, because I think when we had the bill drafted, we didn't know how much. And actually, I don't know if you want to do that. We can probably do this in the Human Services Committee, where we would add in the number by amendment. Forgive me, we probably should have done that today, but we'll get that fixed. But it is $8 million in general fund is the ask.
Okay, thank you. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson. That was my assumption based on the PowerPoint, but I just wanted to make sure. My next question is just, is there a reason that you're doing this as a direct appropriation instead of a bonding
product? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative New Brindley. So we have two bills in, one to ask for GO bonds and one to ask for general fund. There's a strong preference for general fund dollars because, as you probably know, if we go with the bonding approach, the facility would have to be owned by a unit of government. And so it would involve a partnership probably with Anoka County. And while that is probably a workable arrangement, one that we would certainly try to make happen if that was the route that we went. If we do a direct appropriation, then we don't have to involve the county as the owner, and then, you know, turning them into a landlord and having hopefully just be a tenant. So it would be better to do the direct appropriation in general fund, but we certainly are keeping all of our options on the table.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Great. Are there any further questions from members? All right, seeing none. If there is any member of the public that wishes to testify, please raise your hand at this time. Not seeing anyone. So, Representative Stevenson, did you want to provide us with a few closing comments?
Yes, thank you so much. I want to reiterate my major thanks to you both for hearing the bill and for coming out. to visit Hope for Youth for the kind words from Representative Heinrich and Representative Cagle. Yeah, I probably should have mentioned this, but the Hope for Youth right now does have kind of three places. They have a drop-in center, which is in Representative Heinrich's district, a residential facility, which I mentioned, which is in Representative Cagle's district, and then they have this administrative place that's actually in my district. And we're actually hoping to get me out of the business there, because they're hoping to move that and consolidate into the drop-in center. But in any event, I really appreciate this is a phenomenal organization doing really important work. They're a phenomenally community support organizations we talked about. So I'm really pleased that the committee took the time to hear the bill, and I'd ask for your support today.
Thank you, Representative Stevenson, and our gratitude to the Hope for Youth team, and especially to Momo for coming and sharing his story. We really appreciate it. Hearing no further discussion, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 2762 be re-referred to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. And Ms. Schmidt, if you could take the roll.
Chair Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Vice Chair Keeler, aye. Lead New Brindley.
Aye.
Lead New Brindley, aye. Davids.
Davids votes aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, aye.
Ryer. Petersburg, aye. Excuse me. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. We have 10 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 10 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails and House File 2762 is on its way back to Human Services, Finance, and Policy. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. There being no further business before the committee, our next meeting is Wednesday, March 2nd, and I will see you all then. We are adjourned.